but as an industry as a whole, you know, it's super, super important that we, you know, welcome these people in and, you know, get them, get that little itch starting and get them interested, because it will only ever expand.
Welcome to the Underground Podcast. I'm Kate, the gardener guru, horticultural consultant, and writer and presenter on all things gardening.
And I'm Phil, co-founder of Right O'Bara, a creative marketing agency for the home and garden sectors. Join us in conversation with those people shaping the UK's garden care industry.
So without further ado,
let's get down and dirty. Hi, Kate.
Morning, Phil.
Here we are, another episode of The Underground.
Absolutely.
I'm quite excited about this one because we're going to be talking with a chap called Ed Hill from the Horty House. And he also works at the Double H Nurseries. And I know you've actually been there.
I have. It was an amazing day. It was a day out organised by the Garden Media Guild, of who I'm a member. And they arranged garden visits and all sorts of things. And we had a trip to this incredible nursery where it was just so much bigger than you could ever imagine. And if you love orchids, then it is the place to be. And it was just beautiful. It just the sheer scale of the operation, which you don't often expect to see in the UK, and the knowledge that was present there as well. It was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And yeah, Ed is part of Double H, but he's also the founder of the Horty House, which is a collective of peat-free growers.
Yeah, and British growers as well. So
that's the key, not so much peat-free. The key is British growers. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to talk to him because also he has no horticultural background, more of kind of startups.
And it's houseplants he deals with, isn't it?
It's mainly houseplants, so flowering houseplants and green plants, which are your green houseplants.
So that's really fascinating because we import so many of these plants, you know,
and nearly all from the Netherlands.
It's really interesting to get this take on, you know, a British company, a British consortium of different of growers, you know, how they're pulling together and making it work.
And also one of the things for us, we haven't yet spoken to a grower.
No, that's right.
And you know, we really do need to speak to growers. And although, yes, Ed himself isn't an actual grower, he is working for a large nursery and also a very large and what founded this collective. So it's going to be really interesting to hear his take on the industry.
Yeah. So should we dig in?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm delighted to welcome on the show today, Ed Hill from Horty House. Hi, Ed.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Morning, Ed. Thanks for coming on.
A pleasure. Nice to be here during Christmas time as well, which is coming up to.
Absolutely. Well, I think this is probably going out in January, but I think we can talk about Christmas, definitely. Oh, yeah. So, Ed, let's kick off and find out a bit more about you. So can you tell us a bit about your background? As I gather, you've had quite an interesting and diverse career before starting with the Horty House.
Yeah, I'm always trying to be as honest as possible and sometimes have imposter syndrome when speaking to horticulturalists. My background isn't in horticulture. I spent probably the first part of my career sailing professionally at a very high level racing. High performance sport, mostly team orientated, and then building up quite big sort of sailing campaigns that were racing around the world or doing individual solo sailing. So that was where I came from.
That is a wow. That's a wow moment.
Yeah, it's probably not the normal route into horticulture, I imagine. It's funny how I've kind of got here in a way because I took the teamwork and the project work and everything like that and moved that across to working in various high growth startups. And there's so much similarities between getting a team, getting a vision, getting a very goal orientated to like really drive small businesses and help them grow. And so, yeah, that's, I've worked in various startups and then eventually got a phone call around COVID time from the MD here, Andy Burton, Double H Nurseries, that is, with the move to, when they're trying to move their business online during COVID. So that's how I sort of came into horticulture.
Right. So were you already working with startups in that online sphere? Is that how they got in touch with you, because they knew you through that, or what?
Yeah, exactly. I was working in London at the time and had been for various years up in London, and mostly to all sort of online marketplace concepts. So I developed a business which was a hospitality business, a marketing and booking platform for boutique country pubs, sorting out the one side, the supply of all these beautiful places to stay with, then marketing to customers and finding a central point. So that's how the team got to know me.
So right. Not the best business to be in during COVID, though.
No. Although it was interesting. And I guess this is the same from the horticulture. It's amazing how everyone came around together. Before COVID, there was, people were very coy and it was quite hard to get people to see like almost a bigger picture. And as soon as COVID hit, everyone suddenly scratched their heads and sort of thought, rather than thinking about the individual in your own company, what about the actual industry itself? And I imagine that was very similar to horticulture.
Right. Yeah. Very true.
So you helped to get Double H Nurseries online and introduce their sort of e-commerce, or I presume it was an e-commerce system that you were implementing. What then led you to evolve that into Horti House?
Yeah, it's a really interesting move across from, we developed quite a lot of e-commerce speciality and expertise in that area and started doing some pretty major fulfillment for big online houseplant brands. Think Patch Plants, think M&S.com. So we developed some really good expertise there, and that almost opened the door for us to diversify the business even more. But it was actually a garden center owner behind Double H Nurseries is the beautiful Cheetham Glen Hotel. And a garden center owner was staying there with his wife and swung in and said, "I hear you guys grow orchids." And everyone sort of looked at this person who bought in and said, "We do, but not for garden centers." And then that was a really interesting question. As soon as the person walked out, I sort of walked over to the sales guy and said, "Why don't we sell to garden centers?" And it was all these sort of historical issues which technology's actually allowed us to get over. Things like they're very complicated, they require really specific needs, and they're quite, the small volume, it's one trolley per site rather than heaps of trolleys or going out into one location. And if you look at what e-commerce has transformed the industry in the last 10 years in terms of millions of deliveries direct to doors of individual people's houses, then actually, if you think about it like that, garden centers shouldn't be that complex. Neither should a florist or anything else, where actually you're combining at least a trolley full of product to one site. Yeah. So, and it's the more we started to ask why, it just became so apparent the need for something. It was really hard, it turned out, to get British product as a garden center. There's a huge increase in complexity with Brexit and plants that people can't access. And so as soon as we started to ask the question, it was like, well, we need to start cracking on this because there's a massive opportunity here. And that's how it all started, really.
Oh, fantastic.
Ed, would you just tell, for those that don't know, so Double H is most famous for their orchids, houseplants, and it is massive, isn't it? It's absolutely huge.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. And I think you have to see it to believe it, especially in the UK. The scale of what they do from an indoor houseplant, there's an 8-hectare site down in the edge of the New Forest. Subtly location, great sunlight. So from a UK perspective, from a growing, about as good as you can get. And it's a really interesting, forward-thinking, third-generation family business now. and they'd predominantly grow orchids, flowering houseplants like kalanchoe, chrysanthemums, and then now green plants as well. So yeah, it's a really, really good business they've got down here, and very open-minded and about how they diversify and look to the future, which the Horty House is now going to be a major part of.
Wonderful. No, I will. I've been lucky enough to visit, and it is an absolutely stunning, stunning operation. And yeah, it was a great morning going to, and seeing all those orchids. Oh my goodness me. It was incredible.
Yeah. So that's quite interesting, because I mean, before I really delved into understanding about nurseries and sort of the growers in the UK and, well, worldwide, but specifically in the UK, I sort of always imagined that a nursery was like a load of polytunnels and, you know, people going up and down with hoses or watering cans, you know, hoses probably, you know, and that sort of thing. But it's completely different. I mean, it's completely sort of changed from that. I mean, that may have been how it was like 20 years ago or 30 years ago, but it's very different now. Can you explain just a little bit about the operation that you have?
Yeah, it's very automated in terms of to grow and be commercially successful at scale, that you need a high level of automation and technical expertise, I guess, in growing particular crops. The operation there, it's, you know, we're growing, I think, about 1.5 to 2 million orchids every year here at Double Age Nurseries. So it gives you a perspective in terms of getting it right, really important when you're growing at that scale, and also being very controlled in the environment you're in. And, you know, we see some brilliant growers around the country who are sort of dabbling in growing different things. And that's quite a different environment to when you're trying to grow a specific crop. At scale, and there it's the control of the environment when you go in, and if you've been down here, you'll see it. You know, you walk in and it's a consistent 28 degree temperature in the hot zone for the orchids every day of the year. And those types of things, you know, watering schemes and everything around it is about trying to ensure that these plants are grown exactly the same throughout the year, so then they're always available.
Right. Okay. I mean, it is fascinating. I find all of that sort of side of things, you know, truly inspiring.
You need to visit, Phil. You definitely
I really need to
visit. Yeah.
I really do. So you're explaining, Ed, about how sort of the idea of Horty House came about. Can you just tell us a little bit more about, you know, it's a collective, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we started, I think, in February last year, so February 23, with we had, I think, 5 products we were offering. And it was like, let's just get something going and see if anyone bites. And as soon as the immediate reaction from people was so, so positive, being able to get British products. And we were initially just sending them out in the post, boxes of 12 orchids or box of 12 green plants. And immediately everyone sort of said, yes, but what else can you do? What else can you offer? And that led very quickly to us having a discussion with Berry Lane Farm, who are based up in Cambridgeshire. And they've got a really interesting facility up there where they're growing peat-free green plants. And it became really apparent that to offer something really compelling to the UK market, we need to have a diverse range of plants. And that's why we've got the collective. Actually, we're not the only people in the UK growing, and it's very hard for the garden centre customer or florist or whoever to actually find a single source where they can get these British products. So the more we did it, the more it became very apparent that get as many people working together to supply into a single route, basically.
Interesting. So why a collective? I mean, I know you said about getting more plants. So doesn't that not take away opportunities from Double H itself? Could you not then be able to supply more plants, different sorts of plants? Or did you want to kind of be with other people, part of the journey?
Yeah, I think the opposite. I think actually the more you work together, the more opportunity there is. And maybe that's something controversially, maybe in the UK, I don't think we've been very good at collaborating. I think there's a lot of history in growing, and there's a lot of things that have happened over 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years even that makes us quite different from how the Dutch do it, where they are incredibly good at collaborating. They work together. Okay. They sit down, they work, they decide that X and Y is great at growing this crop, so they'll do that one, and B and C will do the other crop. And we historically in the UK haven't done that, where you'll see in the indoor houseplant market, you'll see three of the biggest growers growing the same crop, or you did, which doesn't feel like we're playing to our strengths. So actually, it's really important, the collective, to actually sit down and just look at, there's enough for everyone here. In fact, we can't supply everything. You know, we're not capped by the market. It's just looking at trying to work together, how much you can learn from each other around successes and failures. Just trying to make it as easy as possible to get our product as British growers into the UK market.
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So what's the membership model that you have for Horti House then? Do you have like specific criteria for people joining, that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's pretty selected. There's only a certain amount of UK growers around who are growing indoor houseplants. But we've been really open to any of the UK growers to come speak to us, and we've proactively gone out and spoken to growers. And we've looked a lot around market data, around sales data, around what garden centres are taking. So what do we need to have as our core range? And then we've gone to specific growers and said, you're really good at this. Can we take that and put it into the Horti House? And the whole point here is that it needs to work for the growers. It needs to work for everyone. So actually, sort of vision here should be that as a UK grower, you've got a consistent outlet for your product, and that you're getting a really good, decent margin for it. You're not kind of getting pushed down to the bottom. So we can help support growers where we can actually offer a consistent product and margin, basically.
Right. And probably a really stupid question, but it's all houseplants, is it?
Yeah. At the moment. And occasionally someone will sort of walk in and be like, oh, if we do these outdoor plants, and there's enough of an opportunity. And one thing I've learned through various failures, probably more than successes, is diversify too early and you become not very good at everything rather than really good at something. There's just such an opportunity in houseplants at the moment. But what I think makes us very different is, when I say houseplants, it's not just the growing here we're talking around. We're talking about, from the start, yes, the growing, but all the way through to how the houseplants are put together and marketed. So we're talking around the, you know, we've got our own in-house team designing ceramics. So the whole product development is really, really important. And, you know, how we can elevate those plants in a retail setting with things like care cards and information. So it's much more than buying a houseplant from a Dutch importer where you're just basically taking the plant, you're finding your pot somewhere else. We're trying to look at the UK market, look what UK consumers want, and provide a full service around that. So that's a really important difference, I think, between us and anyone else, is that sort of 360 offering.
Right. You mentioned there about having an in-house team. So you have a marketing team that's specific to Horti House, and they do all of those different bits. You present the brand to the market and that side of things. Is that right?
Yes. I wish we had a marketing team around us. Okay. And that might be as we grow a bit more. We're fairly bootstrapped on the marketing side, but where we do have a huge amount of expertise is, it doesn't look like I'm in a particularly nice room here, but I'm in one of the, behind me is a whole load of trend analysis and trend boards and things. So I'm there. It's all, we do have a brilliant product development team here that HH has, and we've managed to tap in and utilize that resource. So we're designing products for the UK consumer, and that's a really big difference, I think. So we're very aware of what the UK trend is compared to a more sort of European influence. And I think there is a big difference there. But yeah, the marketing, the Horty House, as far as we're concerned, is a very B2B brand at the moment. We're not that, you know, as an end customer, I don't think you'd walk, I'm not expecting someone to walk into a garden center and say, hey, can I have a Horty House Monstera, please?
Right. Okay.
So, but I would hope that we've created enough noise and bothered enough people that everyone knows about the Horty House from a B2B side. So the industry should hopefully know about the Horty House. And then we're presenting this offering, which then they can put into their centers.
Right. So I know Dibley's quite well. So Dibley's is one of a supplier for Horty House. Is that right? So if you go to a garden center, would you know that that is, say, a Dibley's Streptocarpus, or you wouldn't necessarily know that it is just a Streptocarpus? So it'd have the kind of grower rather than the Horty House kind of label on it. Is that how it would work?
Yeah, exactly. And Dibley's are a really great example for us of where that felt like a big moment for us getting Dibley's on board, you know, with the amount of gold medals they've won and the prestige, and especially in the sort of garden centre industry, they're incredibly well respected for good reasons.
Very well respected, yeah.
So yeah, you would, as us supplying into garden centres there, we've just reduced down. Dibley's problem was that they were, I think they had to have 9 trays minimum order, which for Streptocarpus outside of the key seasons, quite hard for a garden centre from a waste perspective. So we're bringing their product together, consolidating it with other plants here and then shipping it out. So actually someone could have 1 tray per week and reduce their waste and ensure the freshness of the plants when they arrive. So as a customer, you would go in and you would see Streptocarpus. And for Dibley's, they actually brand their pots as Dibley's pots. And I think for them, where they've got such a strong brand, we should be absolutely just helping support that rather than take it away. For other growers who potentially don't have a consumer brand, that's not a problem. They'll just sit with the other marketed as British indoor house plants and play on their other strengths, whether that's peat-free or whatever else it might be.
Yeah. So, it's great to see that there are British grown houseplants, because that's been really hard to source. But one of the things that interests me is the peat-free part of your collective, and especially you have a carnivorous grower. Is that right? And one of the kind of plant groups that people are saying you cannot grow in peat-free is carnivorous. But I see that the collective is proudly peat-free on its website. And is this part of a larger sustainability strategy, would you say?
Yeah, peat-free is really important. I think it's an overused word, and probably I wonder at what point the industry will get bored about talking about peat-free. That's an interesting discussion.
Once legislation comes in.
I know, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think, but it's vitally important. But yeah. I think people can get a bit lost in it all as well, is my view. And the more I've got sort of looked into it, that the more it becomes, it's so divisive an issue. And I think everyone's on the journey. And I think there's certain growers who have had huge success and have moved all, transitioned everything that they're growing into peat-free media. I think there's still a way to go in terms of the plugs for the plants, unless you're self-propagating, then I think there's a bit of work to be done there. But I think we'll get there, and that we're talking about 0.5% or, you know, or 0.5% or less of peat within a product. And I think I always use the alcohol-free analogy, where an alcohol-free beer can still have 0.5% in it. And we know there's still like a little bit there that's just helping it taste good or helping the plant survive. And I think we'll get better at that. I mean, it's proven the first trials of anyone's in peat-free media has probably been terrible. Yeah. But over work and over years, you improve that. So I'm keen that the industry doesn't rush the final 0.1% or whatever it will be. Because I'm not sure that's helpful for anyone. If the customer isn't successful with their plants, when they get them, will do more damage to the industry, I believe, than just letting that small percentage of peat slowly trickle out over the next 4 or 5 years until it will be 100% peat-free.
Well, I think when you're talking about the volume of plants that you were describing earlier on that you produce, I think that's where I think for the layman, you don't really associate the volume of plants. And, you know, for that, if all of those plants failed, I mean, that is a huge thing, isn't it?
Yeah, the commercial risk on, you know, it's millions of pounds worth of young plants. And then you need to be very clear that they're going to be successful. And the hardest one here is you think of an orchid that's, you know, it grows here for over a year before it's ready to go out.
Right.
So it's a huge investment of time and energy and love and the rest of it to get that plant ready to go into a customer's house. And so it is risky to make any sort of massive knee-jerk reactions. And, you know, I've been lucky to see and sit on the management team of HH Nurseries and seeing, you know, we're working with the actual horticultural experts within the team here.
Yeah.
And see, you know, they've been working on options around peat-free for the last 10 years plus. And it was only last year, with a bit of a push from a few people, to actually just make that final move over. Yeah. And actually, it was more actually to simplify the operation, where there was potentially some risk, but more risk was having these different substrates, some with peat, some without, and they do require different watering and feed and the rest of it. So actually we turned around and said, look, the cost is bearable, there's a small increase in cost, but actually let's just make the move and proactively just get everything peat free. So that was really important from us from that side, but that was years of work. And I genuinely think no one's trying to do the wrong thing within the industry. And some people are just probably a little bit behind the curve in terms of where they're at. But I don't think we should make their life too difficult, because they're desperately trying to make the right moves.
Yeah.
So it's just, being sensible with it, I think, is my describing it.
No, I mean, although I kind of class myself as a peat-free expert and somebody that offers peat-free training, ideally, you know, I don't want to be asking these questions on the podcast next year. You know, as you said, you know, let's get away from it and we just be talking about compost and growing media rather than everything having to be about peat-free. So let's just talk about your larger sustainability strategy, because when I was visiting HH, I know you talked about the energy and watering. So just tell us a little bit about that, because it's quite fascinating.
Yeah, and that's where we should be talking about, in my view, is the sustainability of which peat is a part of it. So we talked about peat. So let's talk about energy. This growing indoor houseplants, especially, you know, we need to make sure we are growing them sustainably. If you look at the heat that is used to create these environments, look at the water we're using. We use biomass boilers for our heat. So here at HH Nurseries, we're basically off grid, which is fantastic. And that's the same with Dibley's, same with Berry Lane. They've all got biomass boilers. So that's really important from them. And I don't think actually in the UK you could grow commercially now if you're having to pay your heating costs from the gas anyway. So there's good reasons to be sustainable from a commercial front as well. But,
absolutely.
You know, I think there's some really important things around water and irrigation and the, you know, we use runoff rainwater. There's a reservoir behind the buildings here that we use. So, because rainwater is much, much better than using from mains anyway, in terms of the nutrients and the rest of it.
And orchids,
and I think also the big thing that we should be challenging ourselves on is we're close to market. Our ambition here is to supply the UK market, and so we need to reduce our CO2 miles and get as low cost possible plants into centres, and that's a really important thing. I think something which I don't think people are measuring. I think it's quite hard to put a number on. But I really believe, and I've seen it in other industries, where the focus on provenance is really important, and having that really local supply chain, I think I think it's where everyone's going to get to. But we're trying to champion that move, and really, I think let people know as well where has your plant come from, how was it grown, and it is tricky and it is difficult, and even avid gardeners, I think, don't. It's quite hard for them to get actually the detail of was this plant grown in, you know, in South America, shipped across on a ferry to Holland, and then was it chucked in a truck and driven halfway across the UK to then get to here? You know, it's compared to something that was growing down the road and just driven up the road to the centre. You know, so there is opportunity there, I think, to tell a really compelling story that actually does do what it says in the terms of from a sustainability point of view.
And I suppose the more growers you have around the country, then that's even better when it comes to carbon footprint with travelling. So I suppose the Dibleys will be supplying nearer garden centres to them. Is that how it works?
Yeah, exactly. And we're still at a point of scaling, I guess. So, you know, I can't claim we're, you know, 100% perfect at all yet. And there's a lot of work around where we consolidate our plants and put them together, because the key here is we need to get all of our growers product onto one trolley, you know, so there is a need to move some plants to a hub or a center somewhere before they can go out into the to garden centers. But that's the absolute ethos here is that we reduce as much as possible CO2 miles for the plants.
That's brilliant. And can I just ask, has Brexit helped British growers then, because of all the issues that we're having with importing plants? Is Brexit actually working in your favour?
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I sort of going to HTA conferences and the rest, you know, you hear both sides of this story for sure, with a lot of very, very big importers who are very unhappy with Brexit. And it has put the cost up of plants, but I don't feel that's the end of the world. I think there's such a special gift and or special object that, you know, I'm always just sort of slightly disappointed about how little they cost people in one sense. You know, I think there could be that for what they give and what they do, I think we could charge more. But for Brexit,
absolutely.
For Brexit, I think it has created an opportunity. There's the amount of paperwork and issues, and we import a lot of plants ourselves still from the continent. It's created an opportunity for us to do it successfully and navigate the paperwork and be able to bring plants in potentially larger quantities that then we can distribute here ourselves. It should create some friction that allows British growers to be more successful, I think. Yeah.
So would you say, Ed, that one of the biggest problems that Horticulture solves is logistics? I mean, it seems like, you know, it's bringing plants from different nurseries in different quantities and then being able to supply those to the garden centres. Is that right? I mean, have I read that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's it's not the most sexy of descriptions I've heard of the Horticulture, but no, I think you're right. I think...
it's not going to be a tagline.
Yeah, the logistics supplier. It's not like sort of, but sadly, yeah, I think you're quite right. It's a massive part of what we do. It's looking at what the Dutch do incredibly well, and I'm not afraid to look at other industries or other sectors and see like what do these people do really well. How do they overcome these problems? And here we've got a good example with Royal Flora Holland and the Dutch, with the collaboration working together, with the incredible logistics that they have over there of being able to bring plants from the nursery into the auction within, you know, 12 hours or whatever, and then get them out the door. I think we're trying to do something similar within the UK. And it has been hugely problematic for people who want to support British when they have to deal with 10 different growers who probably aren't set up to be able to do the intricate details of retail labels and pricing and all of those other bits that are important. Yeah. And also from, you know, we've seen how stretched, say, garden centres are in terms of the costs involved now with labour and the rest of it, that actually... You know, what can we do to make life easy? It's probably not having 25 deliveries of British plants all arriving throughout a week. It's having one delivery, here you go, all ready to go out onto your shop floor. So there is, I think it's a big part of what we're doing for sure.
Fantastic.
So you are a one-stop shop, aren't you, pretty much for them?
Yeah, that's definitely probably the key point is that one-stop shop. Come here for everything you need, and we're desperately trying to increase what we offer to make it more and more compelling for people to support British growers. And that might be at the moment offering some other plants which we can't grow here in the UK as well. And I'm sort of at the start, it's almost slightly disappointing a couple of years in to say, oh, well, actually, there's still a place for some other products outside the UK. But
yeah,
I think that's the reality of the scale we want to get to and what we want to be by now, is to actually to become a really integral part of every garden centre and florist ordering. We actually do need to have a range which is slightly more than just British. Or it might be that, you know, we're running trials here. Great example, we're running trials here of growing anthuriums with some success, but it's going to take a long time to grow commercially the right volume of the right quality. And so, and we also need to de-risk that for both the British grower here and also for the garden centre customer, which probably means we'll be bringing in anthuriums from Holland for a while until we've got the right quality and we've got a consistent order book to be able to then turn that on. So yeah, that's an interesting sort of step in our sort of evolution over the next few years, I think, where we'll be trying to maintain an offer, just a really good range. We're focusing on British, but if you can't get the right quality or it's not sustainably grown, then actually what can we offer instead? And that's what we're sort of starting to challenge ourselves on this year.
Yeah. And we've talked about some of the challenges that you're facing as a British nursery, and you've really well set out the fact that as Horty House, you're a champion of British growers. What do you think other things that can be done to help support British growers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big part is our customers championing it in their centres. I think actually I was going around a few florists recently, and I think potentially where people go to their independent florists and they expect that to find those unique plants or flowers that tell stories. So it's, you know, when you give something in a florist, it's probably a more gifty, it's less self-purchase, probably more gifting, I imagine, their market. But
yeah.
But there, you know, it's like that analogy of taking a bottle of wine to someone's house as a gift, and you want to tell them that I walked through the vineyard and, you know, it was a beautiful view and this is where they're growing and I met the guy who grew it. And
it's personal.
Know, how can, yeah, exactly. And I think that's where if actually, you know, garden centres get behind that British grown message, which they are doing. And yeah, there's huge, you know, in the last year, it's so lovely to see the amount of British benches we now see where it's full of British products.
Right.
But the more people can get behind that and tell the story of this is where it was grown, and then that just helps just drive demand and helps actually make it a premium product. I think that's really important. You know, it's pretty tight margins when you're growing, as you well know, probably. So, you know, I think anything where we can actually allow everyone to just slightly make that a more premium product and drive a slightly better margin, I think is important. Both the garden centres are exactly the same. They need to hit really tough targets at the moment and making themselves successful. So I think that's one where I think the more focus on the British story and where the plants come from, the better.
Mm. Yeah. And I think there is that opportunity to increase the price. I think, we've spoken to Michael Perry before in the past, and he raised this as a really interesting point that cut flowers, when if you go to a florist, cut flowers are really expensive. And yet a plant, which is going to survive so much longer, you know, is half the price. And I think that's quite an interesting point and something which I think should be addressed gradually over time, you know, and the value that is locked up in those plants is really important.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's the thing where I think actually as an industry and, you know, the Horty House aren't going to change that, and it's something that's going to happen over time. Yeah. But it does feel we're undervaluing the what plants bring to people, for sure.
I think so.
Yeah. I think we can talk about that in a minute, actually. I'm going to anyway.
I've just got one more question going back to where we were talking about the challenges. And I know you've mentioned about trying to learn from the Dutch Dutch teams and growers. How difficult is it to compete with the Netherlands? And do you see that, you know, the peat-free issue, well, obviously we're sort of pushing for peat free, but it's not necessarily taking over it in on the continent in quite the same way. Does that make it harder for you?
Yeah, I think they're quite good at what they do. I'll give them that. and they've got huge subsidies from, or have historically had huge subsidies from governments, their government there to support that. From day one, we've said we will only ever be successful if we can provide the same plant at the same price with the same quality, but it has all these extra bits around sustainability, around peat-free, around British. And that's hard, I think, to get that right with the commercials that back it. I think peat-free has been really good for the UK in terms of, you're right, the UK grows, and through legislation, we've moved faster than Europe and Holland. Although I would say in the last 6 to 12 months, they're starting to get on that bandwagon. So I think that so we've had sort of first mover advantage there, but I don't think that will, I don't think that will last. No. Yeah. So I think from our side, it's about the point of difference. I think that's where we need to make a real big play around the point of difference around British grain. And I think that is where people will pay a premium for them. And that's exactly what we see in fresh produce and other areas, where people are quite happy. Yeah. If they know where it's from, they will pay a premium for that product if they think it's supporting local growers. And so I think that's really important. I think the Dutch are really good at what they do, and that's hard. You know, we've been speaking to British growers, asking them to grow things they haven't grown before, and that takes time, and not everything is a success overnight. So a little bit of that's where it's difficult, where in Holland there's so many growers and they're all growing just one thing and doing it very, very well. So that's our challenge, but I think over time, as we develop a UK market by UK growers, then I think we'll get there.
Right. Yeah.
So for me, it's really interesting when you say about the Netherlands having horticultural subsidies. What we're finding so hard in this industry is how little support the government has given, and also how it just doesn't take it as a vital industry. I mean, things are starting to change. There's various committees, visits to parliament. There's lots of people that are really, really pushing for horticulture. So how do you feel our present government can help horticulture to be recognised as this vital industry? I mean, you talked about how much pleasure plants give, but it's not just about pleasure. It's about food. It's, you know, mental health. There's so many ways that plants and horticulture is vital. What could you say to our government now that would help?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is probably to look at the facts around the economic impact. If they're so focused at the moment around the economy and everything else, quite rightly, but you know, they need to look at the economic impact that horticulture as an industry makes. And if you look at those numbers, they are astonishingly large and bigger than some of the industries that potentially have a much larger voice in Westminster than our own. Okay. And you know, I think the HTA and other people are doing a good job of trying to change that dial and that discussion and really show what we do from an economic side. Yeah. But yeah, I think for me, it goes a lot back to what other things that horticulture gives to people, where from the physical, mental well-being point of view, and those maybe are slightly harder to put a number on, but they're incredibly important. Yeah. And you know, that's, we can't lose sight of that as an industry in terms of what we're doing and the pleasure it gives people, and potentially people who, you know, if you're apart from doing large, you know, physical activity, you know, I think just getting people out into gardens, getting people outside is just so, so important. From probably, again, hard to measure the impact on the NHS, but I'm sure there's direct correlations between that.
Well, there's lots of studies being done that have kind of measured it. So there is research out there that quantifies it. So you're absolutely right. Yeah. And also for you, I mean, COVID, the houseplant boom, you know, that so important that people who didn't have access to outside play to have those houseplants to nurture, to, you know, to love something. So for the houseplant industry, you know, COVID was a boom, and it's still there. You know, people have really understood the importance of a green space in your home if you haven't got access to a green space outside. And you know, houseplants, you look at Instagram and it's still full of houseplant lovers. It's amazing. So it's so important.
Yeah. And that feels like that's really important, both from a overall nation's perspective in terms of that well-being and also giving people that little bit of greenery, that bit of care if you don't have outdoor space. But it's also really important, I think, from the industry side as well, to look at those are probably the, you know, people who in their teens, 20s, 30s don't have those outside spaces. You know, what are we doing to bring them into a garden centre in the first time that they come in? Yeah. Because this is a lifelong customer. You know, this is someone who, if you do it right, yes, they might move and go to a different garden centre. But as an industry as a whole, you know, it's super, super important that we, you know, welcome these people in and, you know, get that little itch starting and get them interested, because it will only ever expand. You know, I see, I've got two daughters and they're not very good at looking after plants, but neither am I, I suppose. But they absolutely love it, and they love the idea of having this thing they're looking after. And that's a 6 and a 3-year-old, you know, and it's like, how do we continue that enthusiasm for something that's alive, you know? So,
Well, put a value on it as well. So put more of a value on it as well. If something's cheap, people don't value it so much. You find that, you know, that's been proven. So yeah, stop selling plants for, you know, £4, £3 in the supermarket. Put more of a value on it. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox.
So Ed, you mentioned earlier on about the career you've had before you come into the horticultural industry, you know, from sailing to tech startups. You know, I think that's fascinating. I'm just interested to find out what your view's been of coming into horticulture. You know, many of our guests have sort of mentioned the friendliness and openness of the industry. I wondered what your take on it was.
Yeah, I think that your other guests are probably hitting that on the head. I mean, when I started, I was very much like still tech focused around how do we get plants out to end customers, and didn't really deal too much with the industry until we kicked off the Hortiads, really. And it's so refreshing when people come to you and they're like, that's a really good idea. How can I help? Or, you know, I could list off a whole list of names of people who've given me help, given their time free of charge to like just discuss an idea or talk about a problem, and I'm really interested to sort of present a problem and hear what someone's take on it is, or get early thoughts on an idea that most of the ideas we have are pretty bad, so it's quite nice to be able to you know, to balance them off people who've like, yeah, I wouldn't do it quite like that. But yeah, I mean, it's a really passionate industry, and you can understand why, with the product is unbelievably special. Yeah. And you can see that, you know, from the industry, where people are really, really passionate about what they're doing. And, and I think it's interesting, because I've always talk about collaborating and not competing, and trying to have as transparent a conversation as early as possible. And I've been used to in the past having these meetings where you talk around the problem or the issue, and no one really wants to show their cards because they're worried about what might happen. And here, I think it's been really good to be able to be, you know, look, if you start the discussion and be like, I'm going to put my cards on the table, this is what we're trying to do.
Right.
Yes, you could maybe, you know, at the early start, the Hortiads, someone else could have copied the idea or done something differently. Yeah. But no one did. And actually, by doing that, everyone just has been so supportive of our idea, what we're trying to do, and try to help us. So yeah, so it's a really, really incredible industry from that side. And incredibly friendly, and there's some pretty smart people in it as well. You know, I think, you know, from outside, people maybe, you know, think horticulture is still this sort of old school industry. And I think actually there's the people I've worked with and alongside have been some pretty impressive people there. And so yeah, I think it's a great place to be working right now.
No, that's great to hear.
Wonderful. So kind of leading on from that, have you caught the bug of gardening, or were you a keen gardener? I mean, you said you're not so good at keeping plants alive. Has that answered my question already?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is my wife's a doctor, and she's been She's always filled her house full of houseplants, which I liked from their aesthetic appeal, but paid very little attention to, if I'm going to be brutally honest, before joining Double H. And then, I think I have. I really enjoy the variety of plants that are on offer, and I know what I like, and I love plants that have pops of color or markings in. I'm not so much down this sort of the green plant boom, I guess. I still love plants which just have some little bit of color just to brighten up a corner of a room, and that's what I really like. But I have them. I now find any room where I don't have plants in a bit sad.
And so
I guess, and that does probably show, and it's still probably not the best at looking after the plants, but luckily I've got someone who's been passionate about it all their life. So I'll leave her to be the expert in that. So
she must be so pleased with what you're doing now as well.
Yeah. Or she just finds it faintly ridiculous that I'm now doing something where she's... that's the joy about being honest. I'll always start my conversations when we're walking around Double H with someone, and I'll be like, you can speak to the experts, but I'm not going to profess to be, have years and years of horticulture experience. But surround yourself with people who do have that experience. Yeah. And, hopefully I can offer a different perspective, a different way of looking at something that overall as a team... Yeah. Well, it's really well.
Wonderful. So I'm just going to finish off then. So with all the partners of the Horti House, if you could only have one plant in your house from all of those people, do you have one and why?
Yeah, I should say an orchid.
You don't
I
know.
I really should.
They're not listening. And
I know. Yeah. This might be my last ever discussion. And I've actually sort of fallen for a plant similar to an orchid recently that we don't grow in the UK, and we're trying to. And so the Anthurium lilies, which are again, and it's just how much the flower, the thing I love about an orchid is how long they flower for. Mm-hmm. And looking at, a plant that flowers for months, not days, and things like that, which are incredibly special and give a real value to a plant. And the Anthurium lily, I've been promised, is going to flower for over a year.
Goodness me. Wow. Right.
So and it's got heaps of flowers and color popping out of it. So that's my I'm sort of really hopeful that our trials that we're doing at the moment are going to come good with those. Ooh. Because I think there's a huge opportunity there, and they're just such a beautiful, easy to look after plant.
Right.
And anything too difficult, and I'm probably not going to be your man. So that would be my number one for now.
Lovely. So we'll watch this space then for hopefully offerings from the Horti House at some point.
That's brilliant. And I mean, straight after this, I think I'm going to be onto Google googling Anthurium lily to check out what it looks like. So I just want to say, Ed, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been fascinating talking to you, finding out more about Double H and also Horti House, and that compelling story that you're bringing about British growers. Yeah. And I think that's going to be amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, could I ask a small favour? Please take the time to review the show and share us with your colleagues. It really does make a difference and will help others to find us too. To keep up to date with the latest happening from the Underground, sign up to our email newsletter at theunderground.fm. I'm Kate Turner, the Gardener Guru. I'm a horticulturist, garden consultant and presenter. To find out more, check out my website at gardenerguru.co.uk.
And I'm Phil Wright, the founding partner of Wright O'Barra, a creative marketing agency specialising in the home and garden sectors. And for anyone bringing a new product to market, we've created a handy 7-step guide to help take your product marketing from zero to hero. Find out more at wrightobarra.com.